5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
A confirmed attack is taking place against the United States. Aliens from an unknown location have been reported in multiple states.
We are controlling transmission.
There is another world that awaits, far beyond what we can see and feel. A place that's anything but ordinary.
What you believe might not be. Step into the zone of the best unknown. UFOs, aliens, ghosts, Bigfoot, conspiracies and cover-ups. And to the paranormal we go.
Well, first and foremost, since they can't make up their minds over at NASA, never a straight answer, as the late Stanton Friedman once said, with this asteroid and whether or not it is going to hit us or not. We're trying to keep up with it. I send George Henry some news copy, and he gets it back to me, and then we blink, and we realize, oh, they've changed the odds again. So if you were worried that we were going to be hit by this asteroid about the size of the Statue of Liberty in late 2032... the chances have actually gone back down again. It was 1 in, 30, I believe, in that range, and now back to 1 in 360, the chances of getting hit by this asteroid. So I just wanted to put everybody at ease, because it was down to 1 in 67 just 24 hours ago, and then another update, and now 1 in 360 chance of being hit. And that's been getting a lot of you to message me and email and ask what's going up with that. In fact, I was planning on doing a show about the asteroid, and I'm not sure if we're going to do that show or not, or if we'll just monitor it and see what happens. If you've been listening to the show, though, lately, you've heard some news reports about that, but you've also heard a lot of our conversations as it has to do with non-human technology, what is being called NHI. And this is particularly because of an additional whistleblower who came forward and did an interview and said this is not human. And piggybacking on what others have also said about some of these entities that people encounter being not human, it certainly makes you wonder. And we've also talked about the connection with the mind. You know, there's so many different aspects of this, and so we're going to kind of pull this apart in even further tonight and really talk about the connection with the mind, about telepathic connection or contact with non-human intelligence. There is various forms that NHI takes on, and among the most common reports are visitations or abductions that individuals have involving non-human beings, something that doesn't look like you and I. If you prefer the term alien, we'll go the alien or the extraterrestrial route. It can also just mean something foreign or not from here. You ever gotten the gut feeling that something's off? Well, when individuals have encountered NHI, they can just tell that they are not like them. They're not human. And although it seems you don't generally hear of abductions very much these days, at least current abductions, you certainly hear of lots of stories, incidents in the past. Every once in a while, someone will say, oh, yeah, I was just taken from my home last week. But really, those are rare experiences. People, though, do say that they are still being visited and that they are having communications with non-human intelligence. A retired Army colonel has waded into the waters recently. Carl Nell, who served on the Pentagon's UAP task force, said non-human intelligences not only exist, but have been interacting with humanity for an extended period. Now, He says this is nothing new. We don't know exactly how long this has been happening, but seemingly since a man has been created, we have been interacting with some other intelligence, whether it be non-human, artificial, or whatever. The Pentagon, of course, they've pretty much been useless in all of this. If it's not lights in the sky and it's not craft, they're not going to go there. They're not going to get into the whole NHI thing. It's just too complex for them. But, of course, they will go out of their way to refute such allegations anytime they are brought forth by continually telling us that there is no evidence for this. Non-humans, though, came up during questioning by Congresswoman Lauren Boebert from Colorado at the UFO hearing just a few months ago, the one that was held in the House Oversight Committee. And although the experts on the witness stand were not the right individuals to be asked this question, that was not their area of expertise. The question should have been saved for somebody who could have answered this question. Perhaps somebody like Dr. David Jacobs or others. Well, it didn't go over well, but it did come up during the hearing nonetheless.
There are rumors that have come up to the Hill of a secretive project within the Department of Defense involving the manipulation of human genetics with what is described as non-human genetic material, potentially for the enhancement of human capabilities, hybrids. Are any of you familiar with that? Yes or no?
No, ma'am.
I am not, ma'am.
I'm not.
No, ma'am.
Schellenberger, Gallaudet, Elizondo, and Gold. No across the board. Didn't know anything about hybrids. Weren't prepared to talk about hybrids. Question was really out of place in my mind. But at least she introduced it into the conversation. It got people talking about non-human intelligence. There was a clip which really kind of tore her apart because there was another question that she asked as well, which drew a similar response. And the individual who was doing the video, I don't think it was a serious video, who already had their mind up and really was doing it just to disparage the congresswoman and make it look like, you know, we have bigger things to investigate. I don't know. Is there anything bigger to investigate than the possibility that a non-human intelligence is interacting with us and has potentially been interacting with us for hundreds or thousands of years, perhaps all the way back to our existence? That's a question for you. It's a question for really anybody who is wondering whether or not this is a good use of taxpayer dollars, that these hearings are being had, and that we are forming now task forces to declassify the secrets. When you talk to experiencers who have had this contact with NHI, non-human intelligence, they will primarily tell you that this is a communication that is happens in a non-conventional capacity. They are not opening up their mouths and speaking, just as we are not speaking with our mouths back to them. This is all done through the mind. It's done telepathically. From my very first interview that I conducted talking about alien and alien abduction, it has always been that these beings have communicated with us telepathically. So tonight we explore that connection, not just with non-human intelligence, but is there a bond between a mother or a father and their child? A fascinating subject we'll get to explore tonight. I've been talking about EMP Shield for years because it works. It's the world's first EMP protection technology for the home and vehicle that works against the electromagnetic pulse, coronal mass ejections, lightning, and power surges. Built to exceed military standards, EMP Shield is one of the strongest devices on the market. It installs in just minutes. Find out why federal agencies, utility companies, and Into the Paranormal listeners trust EMP Shield to protect them and their loved ones. Sure, you can buy direct or from a supplier who might charge you an arm and a leg, but you won't be getting the best deal. Get $50 off EMP Shield at ParanormalRadio.com/EMP with free shipping in the continental United States. 100% American-made from a veteran-owned business. They are leading the way in EMP and lightning protection. Safeguard your homestead with EMP Shield. Go to ParanormalRadio.com/EMP for $50 off EMP Shield. Time and again, contactees, abductees, experiencers, however you want to refer to them, have said that they have had communications with a non-human intelligence. And in many cases, these are life-changing communications, but they're not audible communications. It is literally all telepathic. To explore this tonight, I'm so honored to welcome back Dr. Diane Hennessy-Powell, MD, who completed her training in medicine, neurology, and psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. She's a former member of the faculty at Harvard Medical School and the think tank on consciousness at the Salk Institute. She has written articles in neuroscience and neuropsychiatry journals and is a published author of several books, in fact, and perhaps you've also heard her on the podcast, Telepathy Tapes. It's so good to have you back here, Dr. Powell.
Hi, thank you.
So you have interviewed or worked with patients who have reported having contact with some sort of non-human intelligence over the years. Is that correct?
Yeah. To back up, I started doing research on telepathy and autistic savants about 13, 14 years ago. And at the time that I started becoming really public about the research, presenting it at scientific conferences, I was contacted by people who said to me that your work is really significant from the standpoint that telepathy is how these people who report contact say that the communication occurs. And so I've known people in those circles, scientists in those circles, trying to understand the contact phenomena for quite a while. I knew John Mack actually when I was at Harvard. He was down the hall from me. But you know, at the time that I was there, he wasn't talking about what he was doing. I don't even know if during that overlap he was doing that research. But anyway, so after coming out and talking about my research with autistic savants who appear to be telepathic, I started getting emails from people who are not autistic savants, but people who have had telepathic communication, and many of them have said that it has occurred not just with a loved one, it's also occurred with some kind of non-human intelligence. And so I've been hearing those reports for a number of years now.
What do they tell you? Is there a typical story?
The typical story, there are some common themes. So, for example, there are people who contact me and say that they have seen both tall and short grays. You know, the sort of the classic that's like your little icon there that's in the screen that I'm looking at. You know, sort of your big head and the big black eyes.
The logo, yes.
Very narrow chin. So that sort of classic kind of ET that a lot of people think of. When they think of ETs, they think of these sort of gray creatures that are very sort of either, kind of robotic in their way of being. They don't seem to have much in the way of emotions. And then I've had other people tell me about contact with beings who are blue. Either they describe them as either blue-skinned or being blue-light beings. And those two different contact experiences have a very different effect on the individual. People find that the grays generally to be scary, and they find the blue light beings to be very angelic and loving and healing.
So there are different emotions that go on with the different kinds of beings that people encounter, your research has found.
Yes, absolutely. And then there are some people who also report interaction with beings that, for example, they're kind of archetypes. You know, whether you're talking about Jesus or Buddha or even some of the Egyptian pantheon of gods. And so I've had probably, I'd say the majority either telling me about interactions with beings that are part of the Egyptian pantheon or interactions with Jesus. And what's interesting is that these individuals didn't necessarily come from those religious traditions, and particularly the Egyptian ones.
So some of these individuals have full-on abductions and others just have visitations. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd say that some of them claim that they have missing time and that there was like a craft that appeared in their backyard or whatever, or somewhere out in the woods, and they have missing time, and they had this experience. Some of them say that this has been going on since they were very young, like, you know, 3 years old. So basically most of their remembered life. And other individuals say that it's happened more recently. But and some of them say that they were the only one, and others say that it was more of a group phenomenon where they and their whole family members maybe witnessed something. So I get reports that vary some, but in general, the description of the kinds of non-human intelligence that they report are the ones that I describe.
And what would you say was the first time you received a report that you could identify or that somebody identified as being an NHI experience?
The first time, you mean that I like met somebody who claimed to have that kind of experience?
Yeah.
The first time I met people who were reported to be contactees was when I went to when I moved to Oregon. And shortly after moving here, I met a woman who claimed to be a contactee, and in fact, she was a subject in John Mack's research and written about in his book on abduction, and she was living here in Oregon, and when we met, she said to me that she actually had lived with John Mack for 6 months, and that she was here because she was being sponsored by his institute. And at that time, John Mack was still alive. And then probably 6 months, it was within 6 months to a year after she and I met, that John Mack died. He was hit by a drunk driver in London. And this woman said to me, "Well, you knew him. I'm going to go to his memorial. You should come too." And so I went to a memorial for him down in LA. And it was a small affair, probably 30 people there, but a high percentage of them were people who had been subjects of his research. So all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of, you know, this group of individuals who had these experiences. And J.J. Hertog was there, the author of The Keys of Enoch. And so it was all of these individuals claiming to have experiences. And this was back in 2004. And at the time, I didn't know what to make of it. I mean, I had deep respect for John Mack, but I'd never encountered people who had had contact experiences before.
Let alone this many, and they're starting to come out of the woodwork now. More to come with Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell, our guest tonight. Somewhere between the paranormal and the abnormal. I'm Jeremy Scott.
How clean is the water you're drinking and bathing in? If you call Aquasana Water today, they'll provide you with a free assessment telling you the condition of your tap water. Aquasana sells whole house water filters starting at $1,000. Isn't that worth it to have a 10-year supply of filtered, cleaner water? Aquasana water filters tackle chlorine taste and odor and can reduce contaminants like viruses, lead, forever chemicals, and microplastics, depending on the system you purchased. So make the free call, find out the condition of your water, and make your water cleaner the Aquasana way. It's a smart decision for you and your family and a must for a healthy home. Get a whole house Aquasana water system starting at $1,000 for your entire home. Call and find out the condition of your water with a free water assessment. 800-942-1395. 800-942-1395. 800-942-1395. That's 800-942-1395.
This is Paranormal News. A recent discovery is sparking new questions about the nature of human consciousness. Scientists have detected a surge of electrical activity in the brains of patients after being removed from life support. Dr. Stuart Hameroff, an anesthesiologist and professor at the University of Arizona, notes that high-frequency brain activity associated with conscious thought can persist for up to 90 seconds after death. While some experts interpret this as the brain's final function, Dr. Hameroff suggests it could indicate consciousness persisting at a deeper level, perhaps a near-death experience or the soul leaving the body. I'm George Henry, Paranormal News.
The creatures that I have seen mostly have been the grays.
This slimy two-legged creature with these wide lizard-like eyes.
And I remember the strange beings on the room, and they were black eyes.
They're very large. They look like aliens to us. They're 100% not human.
Visually looking at the object on the ground, you could tell that it was extraordinary and anomalous. It was not human.
Blurring the lines between the paranormal and abnormal. You're headed into the paranormal.
Non-human intelligence. Communication with NHI usually comes through telepathy. We're talking with Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell, who is a neuroscientist, published author, has written articles in neuroscience and neuropsychiatry journals. And we were talking about attending, funeral of John Mack and an experience in which she found herself surrounded by those who had claimed to have had contact with NHI. And you admitted you weren't quite sure what to make of that.
Right. Yeah, I really wasn't. Since then, I've met a number of individuals. It's just continued that I continue to meet people who have had experiences of either abduction or certainly of seeing craft. It became something that I was very interested in.
So you heard from more of these experiencers throughout time. Did you find eventually a connection between the work that you were doing before you met some of these experiencers, particularly how it dealt with your research into the autistic savants? Any connections or similarities?
Well, what I found is that I would say that there are those individuals who, many of whom themselves are neurodivergent, which is just another term for saying that your brain is wired differently so that you're able to see things that other people don't necessarily see, Although, you know, a number of these individuals had other people that saw things along with them. So I can't ascribe it all to neurodivergency. But in addition, then a lot of these autistic savants that I've talked with have also expressed that they see entities that are, you know, both good and bad. So, you know, that there's some that are really good energy and others that are not good energy. So I think that they're talking about the same thing, potentially.
And you have found that these individuals, in the case of the savants, that they are able to communicate through telepathy with members of their own family, right?
Well, that appears to be the case. I mean, I've had so let me back up a little bit. I mean, I really was interested in savant syndrome, which is these individuals. Well, so are usually autistic, although some savants have savant syndrome from something that happened to them. Let's say they have a head injury or they're electrocuted by lightning or something along those lines, or they have a kundalini experience where they have this rush of energy in their body. But something changes, and then they have these psychic abilities. And so I've been exploring those kind of accounts for years now, and the savant syndrome is one in which people have reliably demonstrated that they know things that you just can't account for. I mean, how could this child who's never been to school solve mathematical problems, for example? I mean, like the twins that were studied by Oliver Sacks, how could they generate several digit prime numbers just, you know, instantaneously? And up into 20 digits, which is what the computers were incapable of doing at the time in the 60s when Oliver Sacks was studying them. So it's like, how do they access this information? And so I was interested in that. And while I was studying savants, I was told by the individuals who knew these savants, oh, by the way, they're telepathic. Oh, by the way, they're also telepathic. And I thought, oh gosh, you know, if they're telepathic, then they could be just getting the answer from me. I mean, that, you know, that just puts a whole different layer on things. It's a confounding variable. So I thought I need to investigate whether or not these individuals are also telepathic. And I said, you know, they could be. I mean, you know, telepathy really isn't that much more remarkable than what they do in terms of, you know, knowing languages they never studied or knowing mathematics. And so I put that out there as a hypothesis. And shortly thereafter, I started getting contacted by parents from all around the world saying, oh, my gosh, I never believed this was possible, but I was I've been having these experiences with my child that I thought, oh my gosh, how could this child know this unless they're reading my mind? And then they actually did their own little tests, and they like, and then they did those tests, and they're like, and the child really is reading my mind. And then they don't know what to do with that. Many of these people are teachers. And so they go on the internet and they search autism and telepathy. And my name comes up because I've been on multiple podcasts over the years talking about this. I've presented on it at scientific conferences. And then they contact me and they just say, how do I make sense of this? And what do I do with it? So I have over the years had well over 60 families that have contacted me, and I think I might even be up to 100 at this point. I mean, it's something that a lot of people have independently discovered, even before the telepathy tapes went viral within the podcast world and made more people aware of it, and then even more people started contacting me and the person who created that podcast saying, yeah, you guys are really onto something. I've seen this myself.
But this is only among family members that this communication exists?
No, it's not. It's usually discovered by whoever it is that spends a lot of time with the child and has a bond with them. And so that could be usually that's a family member. I mean, you know, that's who we spend the most time with. But sometimes it's a teacher. Sometimes it's their speech therapist. Because a lot of these children, they can't speak. And they can't speak not because they don't understand language. They can't speak because they don't have good control over the muscles that you need to be able to control in order to actually speak.
More to come with Dr. Diane Hennessy-Powell on our program tonight, somewhere between the paranormal and the abnormal. Here we are just months away from dreaded tax day, and if you could use some assistance, you might call my friends at the Tax Doctor. Get out of IRS collections and back in good standing with Uncle Sam. Don't hide or bury your head in the sand. Take advantage of the Tax Doctor's free service. 800-989-0850. 800-989-0850. Call the Tax Doctor today. 800-989-0850.
Follow us. We're on all the socials, Facebook and X at Paranormal Show, on Threads and Instagram at Into the Paranormal. Give us a like, give us a follow, share our content, and give us your thoughts on social media. And I'd love to hear from you on email, intotheparanormal@gmail.com. Into the Paranormal, somewhere between the paranormal and abnormal.
I'm Jeremy Scott, somewhere between the paranormal and the abnormal. Our guest tonight is Dr. Diane Hennessy-Powell. Her website is drdianehennessy.com. Author of the ESP Enigma, the scientific case for psychic phenomena. It's among her writings, and she's also got more available, so check out her website for the full listing there. But we were talking about the autistic savants. These are kids who can't speak audibly, but they certainly can speak in other ways, as you were telling us.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they learn how to communicate by spelling, and so they have typically, they start out with a letter board that has large letters on it, and that is what they can use given their sensory motor issues. I mean, what they have is issues with knowing where their body is in space. They need something much larger than a regular keyboard, and they can point at these letters and spell out what it is that they want to say. And so people who find out that there's a method like this that has helped kids, they start working with their child to, teach them how to, use the letterboard and spell. And then what happens is shortly after doing that, they realize, well, wait a minute, you're telling me something that is what I was thinking. In other words, let's say they're doing homework and the child is asked a question, and maybe the parent is, or the teacher, the speech therapist, whatever, is thinking about something other than the real answer to whatever the homework problem is. Well, the kid would point out, spell, or put in the numerical answer that was what the person working with them was thinking. So it might be like a mistake in spelling, or you know, like a miscalculation on the calculator. They say, well, give me the cube root of 3, and they accidentally push into the calculator, you know, divide by 3, and they're looking at an answer that's not cube root, you know, of something. They're looking at the answer that's the divide by 3 answer, and the kid gives the divide by 3 answer because they're picking it up from whoever's working with them, and it just becomes obvious. And then they go, wait a minute, that was the wrong answer. And yet that's what you gave me. And they know that the child couldn't see what that answer was. And they're like, oh, you know, are you reading my mind or something? And then the kids, yeah, I am. I'm reading your mind. I can read your mind. And they're like, well, wait a minute. What am I thinking now? And then the kid types out what they're thinking. And then, you know, after a few things like that, that's when they find me and contact me and say, oh my gosh, you know, this kid is really appears to be reading my mind. I don't know what to do about it.
So are these their own thoughts, or are they being channeled from someplace?
I think it's their own thoughts. I mean, I don't know that I don't think that these children are channeling. I've never gotten that impression. Is there a reason why you asked that? I mean,
well, are they able to read minds is what I'm getting at here?
Oh, they're able to read minds, but I'd say that is different than channeling.
So they could, if you're thinking, I want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, they may be able to telepathically get that.
They might, but the thing is that they don't do it, for the most part, they don't do it with somebody other than the person that they are really close with. That's the individual that they have where you have these experiences. It's not, so I've never had one of them read my mind, for example. And because I've never spent that much time with them, I've spent some time with them, but I've never spent the kind of, you know, day after day, you know, hours a day focusing on, you know, what it is that the child is trying to communicate or what their needs are. I mean, so there's a way in which that really, really close connection and bond seems to facilitate this. So I think it'd be incorrect to assume that they can just go out and read everybody's mind. I haven't gotten that impression.
Sure. But as far as the bond is concerned, do you think that there may be some similarities, you know, the bond that we may have, say, with a non-human being, which allows the telepathic information to flow? Or is that even necessary? Would the NHI being have the ability to just implant thoughts into our brain and not really need to have that bond?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, it may be that there's a way in which thoughts can be inserted, and it's where people just say, well, I know that's not my thought. It came from somewhere else. I would say that, you know, that's an interesting, you know, possibility that people have reported. I mean, that people will report that they get downloads of information. So that's one thing that occurs. But then you also have that some of these beings that people say that they've had contact with are very loving beings. And the person will say, I felt like I was in the presence of such a loving spirit that even though they have no history together, there's a bond there. I think that sense of safety with another being kind of breaks down some kind of barrier.
Did you say earlier that some of these autistic savants were also having NHI encounters?
Some of them, yeah, some of them. Although they tend to downplay that. I mean, they tend to want to focus on positive things. You know, so for example, though, a lot of them will report that they have interactions with Jesus. For example, and that's, I mean, I don't know whether Jesus is a non-human intelligence or not, because, you know, Jesus is supposed to be, you know, God in a human body, for example, or God the Son in a human body. You know, I mean, you know, I don't even know how you would characterize that, but I mean, many of them say they have those interactions. But, the way I would say is, rather than using the word non-human intelligence, I would just say, some kind of interdimensional being, you know, that usually we don't have access to.
Which means we must have a way to navigate through dimensions.
I believe we do. I believe this is speculation on my part, but having, you know, been thinking about, you know, how these things are possible for quite a while, It really does appear as though our sense of dimensionality is very incorrect. Because of the way that our sensory apparatus is and the way that we relate to reality, most of us can only experience space as three-dimensional and time as unidirectional. And so that's like living in a sort of a 3.5D world. It's not even a 4D world, because most of us don't think of time as something that moves in both directions. But what these autistic savants seem to suggest is that time does move forward, you know, that time is an illusion, which is what Einstein said, that time is an illusion, that what modern physics has told us is that our sense of time is incorrect, that the past, present, and future all coexist. And these children will tell us that our sense of time is incorrect.
More to come with Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell in the next hour of Into the Paranormal.
Think you've heard it all? Just wait until Into the Paranormal continues.
Are you looking for the cheapest prices on car insurance? Then call the Cheap Car Insurance Hotline right now. Hey, you're guaranteed to save money on your car insurance. Most car insurances can be canceled at any time. That means if you find a better deal, you can switch right away. We're not just one company. We offer most of the major brands of car insurance. We're like a discount supermarket for car insurance. And it doesn't matter if you have a good record or a bad driving record. Our agents are experts at finding you the right car insurance for your needs. Our average customer saves hundreds of dollars a year when they call us to switch. So why don't you make this 100% free call right now and see how much you can save on your car insurance.
800-639-9067. 800-639-9067. 800-639-9067. That's 800-639-9067.
To the paranormal. Enter at your own risk.
Certainly is a mind-bending conversation tonight with our guest, Dr. Diane Hennessy Pell, back for the first time in almost 7 years to talk about her research into telepathy and how it relates to the contact phenomenon. And we've also been talking about her research as it deals with autistic savants. Before the break, you were making the point about our sense of time being off. So did you have anything more to say about that?
Well, what I was going to say is that these autistic children have a different sense of time. And that's even been experimentally demonstrated, because if you look at something called the flicker fusion frequency, which is, so we all know that, like, for example, we plug in a light bulb and it looks like it's continuous light coming out, but it's actually not. It's pulsing, but it looks continuous because there's a frequency at which if it's above that frequency, then we just see it as continuous. We can't see the pulsations because our sensory system can't process it that quickly. And so what we see with children who are autistic is that they have a lower fusion frequency, flicker fusion frequency. And so, in other words, they're definitely experiencing time differently. And one of the things that is interesting from a theoretical standpoint is if you change how you experience time, then how does that relate to how you are able to access information in space-time? Does that make sense, what I'm saying there? It's like,
yeah,
if you,
absolutely.
Yeah, and so there are theories that are out there that if you can somehow, like, dilate time, you know, just expand it out, then it affects your ability to access information. Like, for example, a lot of these contactees who have missing time, their reports of what happened while they were gone are oftentimes things that, if you look at all of the sequence events, that you're like, well, how could you have had that happen in 10 minutes? It's just like our dreams, where there's this, like, compression, where a dream, the dream itself may have only lasted a minute and a half, but in terms of everything that happened in the dream, it feels like it was much longer than that. And so there's some connection there that we're still trying to sort out.
Does that mean that things somewhat like a manipulation of space-time are theoretically possible?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's one of the ways in which, for example, theoretically, we know from Einstein's work that space-time is curved. Okay, you know, that was his theory for gravity, was that really, you know, the more massive an object was, the more it curved space around it. And if you curve space enough, you can create like a hairpin loop, let's say, in which the distance between two locations in space-time that you would think of as being very separate from one another is shortened just because of space-time itself has been curved to shorten that. And just think of a piece of fabric that if you take the two ends of the fabric and you lay the fabric out flat, well, those two ends of the fabric are, you know, let's say it's a yard-long fabric. Well, they're 36 inches apart. But you fold that piece of fabric, and now there's barely any distance at all between them. So that's what I mean by, you know, like bending space-time such that these things that seem so far apart when you've got a more linear way of thinking about space-time that disappears when you realize that it can curve, and it can curve to a significant degree.
We had a story, I'm not sure if you happened to catch that, in our newscast last hour, which was talking about the brain's activity at the point that it is basically pulled off of life support. And in that moment, there is a surge in brain activity. The scientists who have basically done research on that have said that this could prove that the humans have souls. Not necessarily expecting you to comment on that, but thinking of how the brain operates, because you certainly have studied this. We know that there are patterns of brain activity that are associated with death, which was what I was getting at, bringing that story up. But there's also these patterns, from what I understand, that are associated with having increased abilities such as telepathy.
That's what I'm wanting to do research on. And I've basically, for the last few months, I've been working on applying for money to do research, applying for the independent review board, which you need to be able to publish an article in a peer-reviewed journal with scientists at the University of Arizona, where we're going to be looking at the EEGs of these autistic savants and seeing, what brain patterns do they show? I mean, so finally I have some funding in order to actually look at that. And there's been studies done by other people that suggest that if two people are in telepathic communication, there's a synchronization between their brain waves. So that's going to be one of the many things that I'll be looking at.
Interesting. And that could be, recorded or tracked or monitored, something of that kind?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll be doing quantified EEGs, which is where you're measuring the electric potential at the surface of the skull, but you're also using a computer system that's got a software built into it that will then analyze those signals. So, it's like each one of, all of that electrical activity is, I don't know if you've ever taken differential equations, but it's a way in which you can take a very complex waveform and you can break it down into all of the waveforms that added together give you that signal. And the system will actually tell you what part of the brain that all of these different waveforms are coming from. And you can compare that to what the brainwave activity looks like during regular communication, or what it looked like, against people that don't have these abilities. There's all kinds of things you can do that with that. And so that's what I'm going to be doing.
Sounds very fascinating. More to come on our program tonight, Somewhere Between the Paranormal and the Abnormal. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels. 800-445-3166. 800-445-3166. 800-445-3166.
Into the Paranormal is on all of the top podcast apps, including Spreaker and iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, TuneIn, and so much more. Just search for us in your favorite podcast app. Into the Paranormal, somewhere between paranormal and abnormal, wherever you get podcasts.
Dr. Diane Hennessy Powley is our guest tonight. Her website, drdianehennessy.com. That's H-E-N-N-A-C-Y. And, of course, the links, as you might expect, are up where they usually are in the episode page at paranormalradio.com, including to her social media and to the ESP Enigma. Would you say that some people experience a more telepathic connection than others?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely would say that.
And is there a reasoning for that?
I mean, why do some individuals experience it more than others?
I mean, if we're comparing it to the psychic phenomena, is it similar to that where, you know, it's a honed craft, so to speak, or what?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, having been studying this for a while, what I found is that the children who seem to be the ones most capable of demonstrating this are the non-speaking autistic individuals. And I have a theory about this, and, you know, of course it's just a theory, but what happens with these individuals is that they are developing normally, and they're starting to develop language, and then something happens that they regress and they lose their ability to speak language somewhere during that early developmental time period. So somewhere between 1 and 3 years of age. And so then they go through a long period of time where they have no way of expressing what they need or what they think. And then their parent, you know, or somebody who's involved with them helps them find a way to communicate. And eventually some of them are able to like type on a keyboard or an iPad. Some of them point to a letterboard. And that's, you know, that's they're communicating that way. And then somebody says, oh, they're telepathic. And what I realized is that these children whose language was taken away from them before they fully developed it, maybe what this is showing us is that we're all really telepathic in those first couple of years. And that once we learn language, the telepathy starts to fall apart fall away because everybody else seems to expect us to communicate using our, you know, our vocal apparatus. And I really am starting to wonder if it's more of a primary thing that all of us have and that we forgot that we ever had it, you know, just like, you know, a lot of these, you know, there are animals that have been reported to be exhibiting signs of telepathy. I mean, if you look at the research of Rupert Sheldrake and how the children, I mean, that the animals who are like children to people, that they seem to know what's going on. Yeah, you know, with this person that they're so dependent upon, you know, that they'll go to the door when the person is starting to leave work, and then that person might just go, oh, well, I've got to stay for another hour. And then the dog or the cat goes back to where they were resting. And then,
so that's what that is. That's telepathy.
Yeah. It's telepathy. And you have, you know, all of these species that are social species like birds and fish that will change their movement. All, you know, you can have hundreds of them and they all change their movement, you know, at the same time. And it's like there's no obvious way in which they're signaling that to one another. I mean, how do fish, I mean, you know, they've just got fins that they're swimming with, you know, how do they signal to all of the others, you know, just instantaneously move at the same time as me? There's some way.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, there's a shared consciousness that's going on there. And I think it's something that all of us who are social, you know, species have that capacity, but we as humans lose it because we become so language focused.
Okay, so if there is a shared consciousness, does that mean that it's non-local? It doesn't exist in the brain.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think that the model in neuroscience is incorrect. It's the opposite of what they believe. I think that rather than the brain being, you know, a creator of consciousness, I think of the brain as being a decoder of consciousness, that, that consciousness exists outside of the brain, just like the cloud exists outside of my computer. But I use my computer to search it.
So there are false assumptions when it comes to consciousness, in your opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, not only is the idea that the brain creates consciousness a false assumption, it's what's happened is that within neuroscience, it's a false assumption that you're not allowed to question.
It's almost consensus, would you say?
That within neuroscience, that the brain creates consciousness?
Yeah,
it's treated as consensus because it's just assumed to be fact. But it's if you when you're trying to develop a theory, you want to know, well, what is based on fact and what's based on assumptions? And that's built on an assumption. It's not built on fact. And you have people like David Chalmers, who has been saying for, you know, probably two decades now, there's the hard problem of consciousness is how does the brain create it? Well,
maybe it doesn't.
You know, you can solve that hard problem if you drop that assumption.
Sure. And so are there other flaws when it comes to how the brain and human consciousness is misunderstood, I guess?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that the model within neuroscience is just so simplistic. So I equate it to like Rube Goldberg machines. You know what I'm talking about? Where you have, you know, these, you know, everything's a bunch of, you know, levers and, balls falling and hitting the lever. And then that stimulates something else that, you know, then it's a flywheel that moves around and then that causes another, you know, ball to fall here. And then that hits another lever and it's, you know, so the model within neuroscience for how the brain works is almost that clunky. And it really isn't something that explains much of anything. I mean, I think that the model for understanding the nervous system works reasonably well when it comes to like the musculoskeletal system, you know, that our nerve will stimulate a muscle to contract. Okay. And we can understand the mechanics of that. It's purely mechanical. But when it comes to how neurons in the brain could create a thought, There's no mechanics behind that. I mean, nobody's been able to explain any of that, and they're just confident that it does.
And consciousness is the link that allows telepathy to occur, would you say?
I would say that telepathy
the conduit is maybe a better way of saying it.
Well, what I would say is that I would say that we have, all of us have consciousness fields that our consciousness fields are our own consciousness field that we navigate, but our consciousness field itself is also just a, do you know what a fractal is? You know, it's a fractal of the greater consciousness field. And so what's meant by a fractal is that there's this, it comes from, say, holography, where...
I got to take a break. Sorry. More to come. Make your plans now for the 13th Annual Oregon Ghost Conference, returning to Seaside, Oregon on March 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. We've got paranormal investigations at the Times Theater, Bridge Tender, Starry Night Inn, and Masonic Lodge.
ghost tours around the city of Seaside with Rocky Smith and Pete Orbea, a gallery reading with psychic medium Sarah Lemos, hypnoregression to past lives with Michael Caine, paranormal movie night featuring the Lady of the Lake, seances, speakers, classes, paranormal kids zone, vendors, and live radio broadcasts of Into the Paranormal. There's something for just about everyone at the Oregon Ghost Conference, the biggest paranormal convention in the Pacific Northwest. Get your tickets at OregonGhostConference.com before events sell out. Join us March 21st to 23rd at the Seaside Civic and Convention Center for the Oregon Ghost Conference.
This is Paranormal News. Over 1 million interstellar objects larger than the Statue of Liberty may be lurking in the outer reaches of our solar system, according to new simulations. These objects, which originated from Alpha Centauri, the closest system to Earth, have been captured by the sun's gravity and now reside in the Oort cloud, a distant area filled with comets and asteroids. Although these massive objects are unlikely to approach Earth, similar particles are hitting our planet every year. Scientists have confirmed only two interstellar objects in our solar system, but they've long suspected that many others pass through undetected every year. I'm George Henry, Paranormal News.
I just saw this large head hovering over top of me.
I would couch it as non-human intelligence.
Whatever was controlling that object was also connecting to me through the mind.
She felt like this being was probing her mind, looking for something.
Something that we might want to call telepathy was employed to communicate with the witnesses.
Paranormal. It's part paranormal and part abnormal. There's nothing ordinary about what's on your speakers. Into the Paranormal with Jeremy Scott.
Talking telepathy tonight with Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell, her website, drdianehennessy.com. Evidently, I didn't let her know that we were headed to the break, you know, telepathically, and so we got up against, as they say, a rock and a hard place. But I was asking you about the consciousness connection to telepathy. Now we have much more time, so please continue, Doctor.
Yeah, sure. So I was mentioning fractals, and what I was getting ready to say is that what a fractal is that it's something that that the shape of it is basically the same as the shape of the larger thing. So, you know, so for example, in holograms, if you create a hologram using lasers, and you get an image inside of, let's say, a block of glass, three-dimensional image. If you shatter that glass, then each one of the shards of glass is going to have that same image, only in miniature. So what that tells you is that the information about the whole thing is contained in each one of its pieces. It's just that you don't realize it until, and then you can take each one of those shards and break it up, and you'll see the same, you know, the same image in each one of those tiny little slivers. So I think that consciousness is organized in a similar way, where our own individual consciousness fields contain all of the information of the larger consciousness field. It's just that we tend to only pay attention to certain segments of it.
So consciousness is not part of the brain, but our brain is an integral part of navigating these different states of consciousness, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that science is ever going to get to the point where there's going to be a definition for consciousness that will stick?
Well, for the longest time during my career, you weren't even allowed to talk about consciousness. And yet to me, I mean, it's the most interesting thing to be investigating and the most important. And so I've seen a shift in terms of academia's interest in consciousness. Now consciousness is a big thing at a lot of places. I've also seen within the last 10 years a huge shift in terms of the interest in things like meditation and also some of these anomalous phenomena, like I study. They're just starting to find, you know, these things worthy of study. I mean, it's certainly not, you know, across the board, but you have places where people are starting to study these things, and it's just much more acceptable. I found out that a colleague of mine who studies, who's a parapsychologist, has been invited to give a keynote speech at, you know, the American Psychiatric Association's meeting. And that's huge. I mean, because, you know, I'm a psychiatrist, the way we were trained is that, you know, any of the claims within parapsychology, people say that they have those abilities, like, you know, telepathy or the ability to read the future or to see things at a distance, that's a sign that they have a mental illness. And for someone who's a parapsychologist to be given this keynote speech and an award, I mean, you know, actually, you know, it's an honorarium that he's being given. So it's a recognition that the work he's been doing on the afterlife is significant. And that's something that just, it's really groundbreaking and really rewarding to see that happen.
So you believe telepathy is real as it gets, or is there additional research that needs to take place?
There's additional research that needs to take place for mainstream science to accept it. I mean, okay. They set the bar so high that there's still more research. But if you were to, if somebody is willing to take a look and see what research has already been done, the overwhelming evidence is that telepathy is real. You know, if you, like Dean Radin, you know, did a meta-analysis of, you know, thousands of studies, or, you know, he looks at the data, and it's just like, you know, the statistics that, you know, that telepathy is more likely to be real than not are, you know, it's like, it's something outrageous, like, you know, the same as the number of stars in the universe or something. I mean, it's just, the odds are just predominantly in favor that this stuff is real. But it's just so hard for people who are trained in the materialist neuroscience model. It's just so hard for them to wrap their heads around it that it's hard for them to accept it unless they actually see it with their own eyes. I mean, statistics is not enough to convince them. And so that's one of the reasons why I've been focusing on these autistic savants, because right there in front of you, they can, you know, you can have a random 6-digit number, you know, show it to one individual that they're telepathic with. And then the child will type it into their computer or their iPad. And, that becomes more convincing for people when they see something like that.
Well, if not telepathy, then what? We certainly have to explain this somehow, and if you're not willing to go down the road of telepathy, you must replace that with some other arguments, and there's not many out there.
No, I mean, there aren't. I mean, you know, what people evoke is they say, well, how do we know the child isn't being cued? And
they have an earpiece, or there's cue cards off stage or something like that?
Well, I mean, the studies I've done, I mean, unfortunately, I haven't been able to do the studies yet where I have the child and the person they're telepathic with in separate rooms. And I think it, you know, if I can get that to happen, then that will convince people. The problem is in doing that is that these children are so emotionally needy. And when you show up with camera, you know, with a camera to film it, because you got to film it in order for people to
see. It can make it worse, right?
These kids are just like, you know, it's like they're on the spot, you know. It's just like, show me what you can do, and here's my camera where I'm going to record it. And so it makes it harder. I've gone and I've studied some of these children where I didn't film anything. I'm just hanging out with them and seeing what they can do. And
hold that thought, Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell, our guest tonight on Into the Paranormal.
Hey there, all you Bigfoot and nature enthusiasts. We're Scott and Hannah from Squatch America and Wild Squatch Wellness.
We've created Squatch Up Insect Repellent, an all-natural, undiluted bug repellent that actually works without fillers or chemicals. Whether you're hiking, camping, or chasing Bigfoot, Squatch Off keeps the bugs off, even when you're sweating.
Join the adventure, fight the bite, and help us bring Squatch Off to life.
Head to SquatchAmerica.com to back our Indiegogo campaign and be part of the Squatch Off story.
What are you waiting for? Visit the Into the Paranormal store today. Get our new Halloween shirt and our new Bigfoot shirt as low as $19.99. Shirts, hoodies, magnets, mugs, and our digital music library. It's all in the Into the Paranormal store. Your purchase from the store helps the program. ParanormalRadio.com/shop. That's ParanormalRadio.com/shop. I'm Jeremy Scott, somewhere between the paranormal and the abnormal. Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell, our guest tonight. So what kinds of things have you seen happen from some of these autistic savants that you were getting ready to tell us?
I mean, what's interesting is that the first thing that gets reported to me is that they're able to read minds. And then I'd say with many of them, when I start to talk with their caregiver, you know, whether it's a parent or a teacher, they'll also tell me that the kids see spirits, you know, that they see, you know, entities, you know, other than, you know, what you and I see, you know, typically. And then also they see auras. That's another thing they report, or that they have precognitive experiences. I mean, this one girl had this, she had a vision that her father was in an accident and slipped on the ice. And they live in Arizona. And just like, well, there's no ice in Arizona. But then 3 weeks later, her father was on a business trip and he slipped on the ice and broke his hip, just like she foresaw. And so it's like, so there seems to be a lot of non-local information that they access, you know, whether it's information that they were never taught, or reading someone else's mind, or accessing the future, or remote viewing, seeing something that's far away. Some of them claim to see, you know, like they see deceased relatives. That's another thing. People will tell me that some relative of theirs who died before the child was ever born and had any way of even knowing this relative ever existed, the child will start talking about that relative being in the room. So, they really appear to experience all of these different non-local phenomena. And, you know, that's what's been reported to me. And so what I want to do is formally test all of that. Another thing that they report is being telepathic with one another.
What about psychic or psychokinetic abilities?
That's something I've never tested, and it's certainly a possibility. I mean, when you consider that's one of those, you know, ESP skills, and so I imagine some of them have it. I mean, in terms of these non-speaking autistic individuals. Now, I've had people contact me who are speaking autistics who definitely contact me with psychokinetic abilities. There's this one woman who has sent me multiple videos in which she'll have these pinwheels, and they'll be like multiple different pinwheels that she'll have different layers of, you know, different layers and different pinwheels moving in different directions, and then she'll switch the direction. Okay. And it's hard to imagine. I mean, I, you know, obviously I'm not there and I don't have, you know, a camera covering the whole room to see what's going on, but it's hard to imagine that if she was trying to, you know, fool me by having a fan behind her, let's say, to blow the pinwheel, how she could have pinwheels moving in different directions. I mean, you know, they would all be moving in the same direction under the same force if it was something as simple as a fan that was out of sight.
Doctor, do you think that telepathy could be connected to other paranormal abilities? Sounds like there is a connection from what we've been hearing.
Yeah, I think that there is a connection. I mean, I think one of the things that happens with these individuals is that their bodies don't work that well. I mean, you know, they have problems with, you know, speaking. They also have problems with knowing where their hands are, and, you know, physically located in space. You know, sometimes they don't feel very well physically. And when all of those things happen, starting in, you know, such an early age, it before they really have a sense of self, I think that they don't really identify their self as their body. I think that their sense of self is this, it still remains their consciousness, and they've just got this body that they're trying to use as an interface with us. But that's not who they think of as themselves. And so as a result, they never really lose connection with, for lack of a better word, you know, source, or, you know, that unified consciousness field, or, you know, whatever you want to call that. They never lose sight of, you know, connection with that. And so any of these abilities that require being able to just be able to tap into that unity consciousness, they're able to do.
Back to the topic of non-human intelligence as we wrap up here. You know, we can assume that these are advanced beings, and as advanced beings, are there signs that they have mastered this ability to communicate through telepathy?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, they're very good at it. You know, in terms of they're very good at being able to, no matter what it is you show the person they're telepathic with, you know, whether it's a word or numbers, or, you know, they're able to point, you know, they're either type it or point to, you know, it on a letterboard or a number board. And so they're getting that information from this other individual somehow. And that there's just, and they're doing it with 97 to 100% accuracy. And most of their inaccuracy is something that they correct themselves. They know they're inaccurate, and it's more of a problem with, you know, their sensory motor system, and they're being able to just get their body to cooperate with hitting the right key.
So through these telepathic messages, have you heard maybe what they're trying to communicate? Do they have an overall message that they want us to know?
Yeah, they're definitely presenting, you know, so they're willing to do, you know, the experiments to show, you know, that they have this bond with the particular individual. But then when asking them, what it is that they want to tell us, they all want to tell us that we really need to, that there's concern about humanity. I mean, you know, we're at a crisis point here, and you know, and they're really here to sort of teach us that you know, we need to be recognizing our interconnection with one another, and we need to be more loving. We need to be kinder to one another. I mean, so they come with those kinds of messages. There's really a spiritual message behind a lot of their writings.
Well, Doctor, it was so great to catch up with you after so many years. I've been fascinated by your research, and I knew you'd have some things to say about this specific topic tonight and wanted to give you the opportunity to do so. So thank you again for coming on. Tell the audience how they can contact you.
So they should go to my website, which is Dr. Diane, D-I-A-N-E, Hennessy, H-E-N-N-A-C-Y, .com. And I have a limited number of books. My book went out of print. So if they want to read a copy of my book on ESP, there's a limited number of copies that they can order directly from me through my website.
All right. Fantastic. Well, best to you. It was great catching up with you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Absolutely. My pleasure as well, friends. And thank you as well for listening. I always appreciate your comments and your suggestions for guests, who you like, who you don't like. And we certainly take those into consideration as we're always reaching out to folks who've been on the program or may not have been on the program before to talk about all these weird and wonderful subjects somewhere between the paranormal and the abnormal. So until we gather around the radio next time, I'm Jeremy Scott. Somewhere between the paranormal and the abnormal. Good night. God bless. You've been saying this is the year that you're going to the Oregon Ghost Conference. Well, it's just about here, March 21st to 23rd in Seaside, Oregon. The Pacific Northwest's largest paranormal convention returns with 3 days of speakers, classes, vendors, ghost tours, paranormal investigations, and special events. Tickets and the schedule are now available. Check OregonGhostConference.com and join us March 21st to 23rd at the Oregon Ghost Conference.
How clean is the water you're drinking and bathing in? If you call Aquasana Water today, they'll provide you with a free assessment telling you the condition of your tap water. Aquasana sells whole house water filters starting at $1,000. Isn't that worth it to have a 10-year supply of filtered, cleaner water? Aquasana water filters tackle chlorine taste and odor and can reduce contaminants like viruses, lead, forever chemicals, and microplastics, depending on the system you purchased. So make the free call, find out the condition of your water, and make your water cleaner the Aquasana way. It's a smart decision for you and your family and a must for a healthy home. Get a whole house Aquasana water system starting at $1,000 for your entire home. Call and find out the condition of your water with a free water assessment. 800-942-1395. 800-942-1395. 800-942-1395. That's 800-942-1395.
What would you do if a natural disaster occurred tomorrow? I hate to tell you, tomorrow is too late. Prepare today with Ready Hour Foods at ParanormalRadio.com/food. Emergency food kits, bulk and packed foods, ration bars, coffee, water, and survival gear. Find it all from Ready Hour Foods at ParanormalRadio.com/food with fast and free shipping on all orders over $49. Get yours today.